Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Leap Podcast. Today is a conversation with a good friend of mine, Selina Bicho, who is a women's health specialist as well as a physiotherapist based in DISC, which is Diverse Integrated Sports Clinic here in Dubai. The reason why I'm having this conversation with her is that there is so much to uncover, and there are so many things that I wished I knew when I was going through the different phases of my life. I think one of the best ways to empower women is to educate them. Educate them about themselves, about their bodies, but to also help them understand the changes that may occur biologically speaking as they grow. We want them to work with their biology, not against it. That is the biggest part. We always talk about bouncing back. We never look forward towards the future. And that's what leaves us helpless. That's why we feel lost most of the time, is that we're not working with the now. We're working with a past that doesn't exist anymore. Hey, I am Amal Murad, and this is the Leap Podcast. Hello, everyone. I am so excited for you guys to be here and for us to join in a conversation with a good friend of mine. Firstly, I'd like to introduce you before you jump in. The girl with me today is a girl that I met a while back, and we discussed a lot of important things that I feel need to be addressed. This is Selina Bicho. She's from Portugal. She is also a physiotherapist specialized in women's health, and she's been in this field for almost 8 years. And her focus is musculoskeletal injuries and women's health, which is great because I feel like it's not just only, you know, pelvic floor dysfunction that you work on, but you also, you know, deal with a lot of sports injuries, and I feel, which is why I want you to be here. And she is now working at DISC in Dubai, which is basically a diversified integrated sports clinic found in Healthcare City. So hi, Selina. Welcome to the Leap Podcast.
Most welcome. Thank you for inviting me. It's a nice pleasure to be here. And I think we have a good conversation. We're going to have a good conversation together.
I'm so excited. And before I had you on, I tell this to everyone, and it's something that I experienced myself, that I had no idea a physiotherapist, a women's health physiotherapist existed when I had my baby. I knew there was an OBGYN, I knew there was a personal trainer, but I never knew there was such a thing as a women's health specialist. So that's why I'm so happy that you're here. I feel like we need to discuss what you do. We need people to know that you are the middleman between the OBGYN and the personal trainer. So the question that I have for you today is, why did you choose this specific field? Why did you choose women's health physiotherapy?
So I think life just gave me this chance. It was my interest about the pregnancy and women in general. When I finished my degree, my last paper was about incontinence already. So after that, I just focused my mainly interest and my training in women's health. I complement always with the musculoskeletal injuries and posterior education. And I started with some pediatrics. But then I understood that before the pediatrics, we need to help these moms. We need to, with some conversation between me and moms, I understood that they've been passing for the struggle times as well during the pregnancy and postpartum. So I started to study a bit more this field, and I always work between the musculoskeletal pediatrics and women's health. So that is not the main reason, I think, is my interest, let's say.
I love that. And the reason why it's so important what you do, because even a lot of physiotherapists that I know, like, you need to be specialized to deal with women, right? It's the same when it comes to personal training. Just because you're a personal trainer doesn't mean that you're qualified to coach women that are dealing with certain issues.
That's why, like, we need to find people that are more specific. And I think that's what's missing at the moment, where it's not a general diploma. It's not something that's generic, but it's more to deal with certain situations when it comes to women. And women go through a lot of phases in their lives. And a big chunk of it for me that was like a smack in the face was motherhood, was pregnancy, because we have a lot of myths, you know, in our culture. We have a lot of things that our parents and grandparents tell us, but a lot of it is not really based on science. And when I gave birth, that's all I had, what my parents, my mom and my grandmother told me. And now studying, I realized that a lot of it is fake. Like, the biggest example that I could give you is that I was told that if I train during pregnancy and if I lift anything after pregnancy, especially the first couple of months, my uterus will fall. Like, that was a thing. That's a thing that moms tell you.
Or during the pregnancy?
Both. Okay. But we don't realize that our baby is weight to begin with.
Exactly.
So we want to prepare for the baby. So what are myths that you usually hear women say? Like, when women come to you, they say some... For me, I deal with a lot of women as well, and there are a lot of things that we've been taught that are not necessarily true.
Yeah.
So
as you said, one of them is a pregnant woman cannot exercise, cannot work out, and it's a risk for them. Women cannot lift weights. If you are breastfeeding, if you train, your milk supply will decrease, which is not true. And if you have any issues with the pelvic floor, like incontinence or prolapse, the best thing to do is Kegels. It's the contraction of the pelvic floor. This is also a myth.
Pelvic organ prolapse is when one or more of the organs in the pelvis slip down from their original position and bulge into the vagina. Any condition or activity that weakens the pelvic and supportive tissues is a potential cause of prolapse. An example of one of these activities is pregnancy, since there is a lot of pressure on the pelvic floor muscles as the baby grows. Studies even show that prolapse is usually more prevalent with women who've had vaginal births because of the amount of pushing and bearing down that's needed during delivery. Please note that there are different types of prolapse. There is a systocele, which is the prolapse that occurs when the bladder protrudes in or out of the vagina. There is rectocele, which is when the rectum bulges in and out of the vagina. There's uterine prolapse, which is where the uterus is no longer supported and falls lower. There is the enterocele, which is what happens when your small intestines press against the back of the vagina towards the opening. And there's also vaginal vault prolapse, which usually occurs after having a hysterectomy and the uterus is no longer there to support certain structures in the pelvic floor. As a result, the top of the vagina falls down into the vaginal opening. Urinary incontinence. Incontinence is when you accidentally leak urine. This is a problem that affects millions of women but is rarely talked about. Although it is common, it is not necessarily considered normal because it is a sign of weakened pelvic floor muscles as well as tissues. People usually experience incontinence when they exercise, laugh, sneeze, or cough. You don't necessarily need to be pregnant or postpartum to face such issues. That being said, there are different types of incontinence. Number one, stress incontinence. This can happen when there's too much intra-abdominal pressure, which leads you to leak. Coughing, jumping, lifting heavy, laughing too hard can all cause this type of incontinence. Number two, urge incontinence, which feels like you urgently need to go to the bathroom but may not get there in time. Number three, overflow incontinence. This is the type where you can't fully empty your bladder and may involuntarily leak afterwards. Number four, functional incontinence. This usually occurs with people suffering from mental or physical problems such as dementia or arthritis, which prevent them from getting to the bathroom on time. Last but not least, mixed incontinence. This means you may have any two types of the conditions above. Many women both have stress and urge incontinence.
If you have one, two babies, it's normal to have urinary incontinence. It's normal to, the pelvic floor is not the same. This is like the big myths that I heard so much.
Yeah.
And if you, another one is like the main, one of the main ones that I heard during the pregnancy, when women come to see me because they want to prevent a diastasis.
Diastasis recti is the partial or complete separation of the rectus abdominis, which is basically your six-pack. Diastasis recti is very common during and following pregnancy. Studies even show that almost all women will experience diastasis after their 35th week of pregnancy. This is because the uterus stretches the muscles in the abdomen to accommodate your growing baby. In some cases, the gap closes on its own postpartum, but when the gap exceeds 2.5 centimeters, this is when it usually requires intervention in terms of physiotherapy as well as training.
Yeah.
This is the big one, and which is not true at all, because you cannot avoid a diastasis in the first trimester, in the third trimester, sorry. Yeah. 100% of the women have the diastasis, so you can't avoid that.
Yeah, and for those of you listening in, diastasis is the separation, it's the separation that occurs. Basically, your ab separates, the tissue in between stretches so that you're able to grow a baby inside of you. I think it's so important that you said that, because that is the obsession right now, right? Diastasis recti. People, I think everyone I know that I coach is only concerned about diastasis recti. And a lot of them don't even care about pelvic floor dysfunction, is because you can't see it, right? That's the scary part, is that women, because they can see their diastasis, they can see that their abs don't look the same, suddenly they're concerned. But if they're suffering from incontinence, and which is involuntary, you know, urination, they don't mind it. To some extent, they normalize it, because again, this is something that they can hide from people, and they don't necessarily need, can, like, it doesn't show, right? Which I find super concerning. But I'm happy that you're saying this, because we need to remind women that your body changes throughout pregnancy, and anyone that promises you that you can bounce back, it's illogical, it's scary, and it's something that will hurt you more than actually motivate you, because we're not the same. The fact that your life is not the same means your body is not the same.
And you need 9 months to change your body during the pregnancy. So it's normal that you will need 9 months,
so much
9 months more after, because you also are not sleeping enough. You have a lack of sleep. Yeah. You are tired. Sometimes you need to go back to work. So, and you need the baby. You have a baby to take care. So your body needs time to recover. It's not like after the magic 6 weeks. This is not exists. Like almost like when you go to the OBO or gyno, the doctor said that after 6 weeks, 4 weeks, we can do your normal life. But we cannot forget, like, but for them, like in terms of uterus, in terms of sexual intercourse, you can do everything. That's why they talk about. They don't talk about, like, they are not expecting you're going to go back to the exercise, you're going to go back to the running. They should, but they also don't know about this stuff. It's not their
specialty. Yeah.
It's not their specialty. So we cannot judge them because they talk about what they know. That's why we as a physiotherapist and specialized in pelvic floor are here. We do the link between the OBO and the personal trainer. And when you go to the personal trainer cannot say, yeah, your pelvic floor is like that or like this without any assessment. We cannot assess like the pelvic floor only with the interview. Sometimes, and it happened a lot, I do all my interview, and I believe me, my interview is very extensive. And when I check the pelvic floor, well, this is a surprise. This is not what I expect. Okay, so there is no way to assess the pelvic floor without internal assessment, because the pelvic floor is internally on your pelvis. So we need to check how it works, how is the the endurance, how is the contraction, how your pelvic floor is working when you increase the interabdominal pressure. It means when you cough, when you sneeze, when you jump, when you lift weights, for example. We need to check how the pelvic floor are working.
I completely agree. So this is a question that I always get as a personal trainer for a physiotherapist. The question that I receive is like, Emel, what can we expect when we go to a pelvic floor specialist? So now we'll talk just as moms. So if a mom comes to you, let's talk about pre-baby, which is pregnancy, and post-baby. What kind of examinations can they expect? And what are these examinations for?
Basically, one of the first reasons, and for me is really important, is pain. When they have pain, we need to decrease this pain, whatever is the pain, like neck pain, lower back pain, wrist pain, which is happen a lot as well. So my first goal is always decrease the pain. Sometimes we cannot, because it's like struggle because of the pregnancy and your body changing. So they give you the pain has an alert to say your body is changing, you need to adapt. Okay, so, and these cases, and we have a tool that is really, really important. And for me, is one of the main things that has a healthcare professional we have, this is education. So we do a long interview to understand all your habits, all your habits coming from your childhood, before the pregnancy, how was your standards before the pregnancy, how was your lifestyle before the pregnancy, what did you change during the pregnancy, are you able to exercise the same as before? All these interviews are very important. And then we give mostly education. In my first appointment, my principal and my main tool is education. We need to educate about the constipation. We need to educate about the pelvic habits. We need to educate about movement. All these things can really make a difference. And then, of course, depend of the every woman, if they have pain during the intercourse, if they had it before, if they have lower back pain, which is really connected with the pelvic floor, if they have pelvic pain, we also can work on it. I usually, when the woman doesn't have any symptoms, I usually see them around 20 weeks.
And pregnancy, right?
Pregnancy, yeah. If nothing measured is there, the first thing and one of the main things that I do is teaching them how to connect with the pelvic floor, which means how they can contract and how can they can relax. Because it's very important they have this knowledge to work during the pregnancy. It's not all about the contraction, it's a lot about the relaxation and this awareness of the movement. The pelvic floor also needs to move. Okay? Because when you sneeze, when you cough, your pelvic floor needs to contract to protect about the continence. But when you move, when you lift weights, the pelvic floor also needs to have movement going up and down compared with the internal abdominal pressure. So I need to teach this to the woman because we know that more than 23-25% of the women, when they say, I'm doing a Kegel, they are not doing correctly. So they are not doing the contraction. They are not aware of the pelvic floor. So during the pregnancy,
some people don't know how to relax either.
Yeah. Yeah. They overactive the pelvic floor. So they never have this awareness of relaxation, which is very, very associated to coordination is very associated to the prolapse during the pregnancy afterwards. We know actually that if you train your pelvic floor during the pregnancy, you can prevent the incontinence afterwards, like postpartum. So it's the right time to do it. Around the 35-36 weeks, I also teach women how can they relax and how can they do some mobility on the tissues, like a perineal massage and I also teach them how to push and how to, again, is all about coordination. Okay. So it, which is very important during the labor, because if they will go for a vaginal birth, they need to realize how can they relax the pelvic floor, and then tissues need to be more loose at this time. Okay. Even if they go for the C-section, I think it's also important when they have the schedule C-section, they need to be aware of the pelvic floor, because you have been pregnant for 9 months, like the ones that are pregnant for, they have a vaginal birth. And then you have all the issues afterwards, even if you don't have the vaginal birth, okay? If you don't have any tear, if you don't have any episiotomy, you have been pregnant for 9 months. And one of the main thing that I also see is when the woman have diabetes during the pregnancy, the baby is bigger. Most of the time, the baby is bigger. And a lot of doctors don't want to go for the vaginal birth, so they want to schedule the C-section. And the diabetes is very associated to the increase of weight in terms of mom and baby. And this is one of the main risks for pelvic issues after birth and even during the pregnancy. Okay, when you gain weight is one of the risks. So this is another thing that you need to teach mom to be aware. And this is the moms that also need to work more in the pelvic floor.
It's interesting because I had gestational diabetes, and it was hell, because like a lot of things are out of our control that we don't realize. I was put on a diet and I had to reduce a lot of my carbs, but at the same time I was vomiting a lot, and the only thing I could keep in was carbs. So it was a back and forth, and then a lot of women kind of beat themselves up. But what we can do is we can control what we can, then we have to let go of what we can't control. And I think that's why this is where you come in, where you can help us with what we can do. And that's like all we could ask women to do, right? Do the best you can, and everything else, you just let it be, right? But one of the things that I found that was super interesting that you said was that people who have C-sections, the moms that even I coach, tend to think that they don't have pelvic floor issues because they didn't have a vaginal birth. And I feel like, no, it's not necessarily about the delivery, but it's about the pregnancy all throughout. Like the 9 months of load on your pelvic floor takes a toll. And I feel like a lot of women who've had C-sections don't realize that it's just probably the same as every other woman who has gotten pregnant. You still need to have the awareness. You still need to work on your pelvic floor. And so my question for you is, why do you think women fear exercise during pregnancy? Why do you think women are afraid of exercising?
The main reason is the miscarriage, for sure.
Do you feel it's connected, though?
I feel that it's connecting on their mind, but it's not the reality. Okay. Of course, that we have a contraindications, and we have the absolute contraindication or the relative contraindication, which means that the absolute is you are not able to do exercise at all when you have a high risk.
Which is high risk pregnancy. Yeah.
Yeah. There is a list of contraindications, which is really important for us to know as a healthcare professional and as a personal trainer. But these cases, most of them, they don't come to see us because they already know from the doctors they are not allowed to do it. Okay? And then we have the relative contraindication, which means that when they need to be assessed to know if they can do exercise, or the exercise needs to be adapted in terms of the case.
What's weird is that, so what you're saying is that the condition affects or determines how you train, but training does not necessarily cause the miscarriage. Does that make sense?
Exactly. 100%. Okay. 100%. We need to adapt. We need to assess all the women, of course. And Because I can tell you an example. Like, for example, a lot of women lost a lot of strength on the lower limbs because, well, they don't lost strength, but the weight is more when you are pregnancy. So the relation between the weight and the strength is bigger. The gap is bigger. So we need to keep working our lower limbs because they need to be strong to adapt all the changes on your body. Okay? But you can work these strengths in different ways. Okay? We can go to the water. We can go to the pool and do stuff on the pool. If you used to do CrossFit, okay, we need to adapt in terms of load on your body. Sometimes we need to adapt the exercise as well because you don't have the same range of motion. For example, most of them can't squat the same way that they squat before. But it's not because they are not able to or because they are not strength enough. It's because they have a big belly and the hip cannot flex enough. So we need to adapt in this case. But I think it's really important to also say, like, women do not need only to be mobile. They need to be strength. They need to create strength because afterwards they have a baby, they have a crib to carry on. They need to flex the trunk.
Fix the car seat as well.
Exactly. So they need to be bending forward a lot of times to take care of the baby on the bed and whatever. So the body needs to be able to move in all directions and also need to be strong to do these changes.
If only I have met you before I got pregnant, Selena. I swear. You know what's interesting? And it's something that I learned when I became a pregnant postpartum coach is that, like, we do Kegels very much separately than every, like, we do them while we're sitting down. We do them while we're laying down in most cases. That's how women are taught to do Kegels, but we're never taught how to do Kegels in movement. So that's where I was like, what? Like, when they start telling us how to perform a Kegel to do a deadlift, because, like, that's where your pelvic floor has a lot of demand, right? That's where you actually need to know how to control your pelvic floor so that it can have a strong foundation before performing a movement. So I feel like that's one of the missing things in the market for sure.
I believe that in that point, we can work a lot with breathing. Breathing is one of the main tools to work the pelvic floor. If you have the pelvic floor are connected to the diaphragm and the abdominal wall, they work together. And this is 100% known by the science. Okay. So whenever you work with the breathing, you also work with the pelvic floor. They work like together. So I agree that we need to train your pelvic floor and you need to be aware of the pelvic floor in order when you train, you need to be, the pelvic floor needs to be automatic, okay? I don't ask women to lift weights, like really heavy weights, and to be awareness of the pelvic floor. They cannot. They need to be aware of the movement, of the squatting, okay? So, but the pelvic floor needs to be connected, and this type of training needs to be done before, not during the training. I always teach women how they can work with the breathing with the weights, because if they are connected with the breathing, the pelvic floor is supposed to work
automatically
in the correct way. Automatically, yeah. If you go to the CrossFit gamers, they are not aware of the pelvic floor.
Yeah.
Well, but they also pee a lot. They also have a lot of leakage.
But again, we ignore, right? Like, I know a lot of athletes, high-level athletes, we're taught to ignore this. It's like, oh, it's part of life. It is what it is. You know, no. That's not supposed to be life, you know? We have to address the issues.
I believe that we have people that they are studying these things a lot. You just need to follow them. We just need to follow the guidelines. We just need to follow the science because there are people studying these things. Actually, I've seen a study recently saying that during the CrossFit and when you're carrying heavy weights, if you stop breathing for a while, if you do a small inspiration and then stop breathing, is more effective than on the pelvic floor than when you breathe out completely during the movement. So these type of things can make a difference on your train. So I think it's very important.
You know, like the first time I went to a physiotherapist, it was funny because like I'm an athlete, I'm a coach, and then she's like, you're not using your core. I said, listen, I'm squeezing, I'm doing the work. She's like, no, you're not doing anything with your pelvic floor. And I'm like, what does that mean? And it's like it hit me that I probably all these years I've never fully understood how to use my core, and a lot of women are struggling in that case because we're taught like men, right? Men are taught, you want to brace your core, squeeze everything. Doesn't matter. Squeeze your abs, put bear down on your pelvic floor. It doesn't matter. And then when you get pregnant and suddenly this doesn't apply, it's a shock, to be honest, a big shock to someone who considers themselves a full-time athlete. I think the main thing I truly appreciate about what you do and your, you know, thesis is that you know that it's not just about the resting and the stretching. You know that it is about the strengthening. And this is something that I abide by in my whole way of teaching women, is that we tend to not realize that strengthening could be the solution. Not necessarily in all cases, but strengthening needs to complement the stretching and the resting. But we're so scared of the strengthening portion. Like, I didn't know that, like, strengthening your glutes can strengthen your pelvic floor. Like, that is the simplest thing. Like, strengthening around your pelvic floor can also be effective. And it's so interesting. It's not about the toning, you know, the idea that you need to look a certain way. I actually felt the strongest when I wasn't as toned, you know. I felt the most comfortable when I wasn't looking as shredded as usual, you know. And that's when I felt the best. And I think we need to create a distinction that a lot of the athletes who do look shredded do not necessarily feel good. And it's for a reason, for a competition, and not for health. And that should be separate. You know, we should understand that these can be two different things and not necessarily coexist in some cases, because, you know, as athletes, we want to push our limits. And it's not about longevity as much as it is about short-term competitions, you know.
How many athletes do you know that don't even know about the pelvic floor, and what is this?
I can only name you the few that know. The ones that don't know are too much
to count. They cannot work there. They cannot be aware. Sometimes the work just goes in this way. Just teach them what is this, where is it, and how they can work on it. Because you can strengthen your glutes a lot and your pelvic floor could not move at all. Not even contraction and relaxation. It could be in the same way all the time. So it's like elevator. You can be always in the fifth floor. If you don't go to the ground floor, you cannot reach the highest floor. So they can strengthen a lot the glutes. They can be very strong. They can have the really good core, which is what it is. What it is. they can have the really six packs, but the pelvic floor is stuck on the fifth floor because they are not aware of this. And education comes from this. Education comes from your childhood. Education comes from your teenager time, you know, when you start to be aware of this muscle. Why we are taught in the school about the biceps, all the general anatomy, but they never speak with us about the pelvic floor. And they never say that the men's also have pelvic floor.
Oh my God, that in itself. do you want to know how many men that I met that have a diastasis? Powerlifters mostly. And no one talks about that because, like, for men, it isn't so much about the diastasis. It's about performance. But for women, a lot of it is not about performance. It's about aesthetics. So
yeah, but diastasis is a big, big, big topic because we still don't really know what is the main, what is the bad diastasis or good diastasis, because the diastasis can have different forms and can be superficial, deep, can be more than four fingers, can be only two fingers, but give you much more struggle times than the ones with four fingers between. With four fingers means the gap between the two rectus abdominal. So we still don't really know about this diastasis.
No, we don't. I definitely, like, even when I was studying a little bit further, there are such things as functional diastasis where you could have a separation, but it doesn't necessarily affect you the same way that it does other people. So it is case by case. And
exactly.
I think that's why they need to see you, right? They need to come see
exactly.
you.
Exactly. Yeah, and a lot of women are concerned, as I told you before, about the diastasis during the pregnancy. And you can prevent. And there is only one small study about the prevention of the diastasis during the pregnancy, saying that we can prevent, but is a study with a poor evidence. And also, they don't say us how and why we can prevent the diastasis. So we, at the moment, maybe in the few years we already have the answer, but at this moment we don't know how can we prevent, and we don't know if we can prevent or not. We know that 100% of the women have diastasis. And we know that if you work your trunk rotation and the pelvic floor, we also don't know exactly the relation to it between the pelvic floor and the diastasis. But we know that if you work on your rotation, on your thoracic rotation, you can increase the strength of your abdominal wall. But we don't know exactly how it can influence on the gap.
So I don't want to take too much of your time.
No worries.
Genuinely, I enjoyed this so much. But I wanted to, you know, end this on a good note and something that people can follow later on. If you have advice you'd want, or if you have something you want all women to know, what are your thoughts about, you know, women in general, women health, women sports? What are your thoughts? Let me repeat and rephrase the question. What do you want women to know about physiotherapy that you wished every woman in the UAE or around the world could follow?
Well, there are a lot, but one of them is don't think you are alone. Don't think that urinary incontinence is normal. Don't think that pain during the sexual intercourse is normal. Don't think that after 6 weeks after birth you are ready to go back to the exercise. Check with some pelvic floor physiotherapist first. Be aware of the pelvic floor. Teach your daughters as well. Teach your sons that we have a pelvic floor and we need to also be concerned about that. Don't think that constipation is a lifestyle. Constipation can really influence your pelvic floor and can really give you issues on the pelvic floor, which is, I didn't tell you before, but which is one of the big reasons of the women that going for the C-section during the pregnancy, they suffer of constipation. So this is one of the reasons they can watch why they also can go, and they should go to the physiotherapist to be aware and to learn about the pelvic floor. And I think that's it. This is one of the main things. And another really important thing, and they are strong enough to struggle they need to be strong to do their diary activities. They need to be strong to carry the crib. They need to be strong to carry the baby 100 times a day. And they also need to be gentle with themselves when they don't sleep enough, when they have a really lack of sleep, plus the work, plus the lifestyle, really stressed lifestyle. They need to be kind with themselves. They don't want like, they cannot want like a really change on their body, because the body is so smart, so they will save all the energy for the main things. And the main thing is surviving, is not training.
It's also your baby's survival, right?
And it's also your baby's survival. So you need to be kind with this. And another thing is like, we know that a lot of women have been postponed their recovery, their help, looking for help for a long time. But I also think it's important to tell them, like, if you don't treat yourself, even if you think you're going to be a good mom because you're going to stay with your baby and you don't want to leave him at home and you don't want to take him to the clinic, which is, in the end of the day, this is not true. Because if you are not good, if you are not feeling good enough, you will not be the better mom. Better mom is the one that treats herself. You can be a better mom if you are in the better mood. So yeah,
in a better state of mind.
Exactly. In terms of mental health, in terms of physical health.
Physical health, yeah. It's so important. It's so, because like a lot of the things that you talked about, whether it's constipation, whether it's pain during intercourse, all of these are things we're so shy to talk about. This could be cultural norms that we're not used to talking to anyone about these things, right? And for me, that was the biggest eye opener, is that I couldn't talk to my OBGYN about this, and my physiotherapist helped me open up. And I felt like it's our job as not only physiotherapists, but also personal trainers, to create a safe space for women to talk about these things without fear of being judged, without feeling like there's something wrong with them. Like, no, you have an issue that we can actually help with, right?
Women need to be listened.
Yeah, we need someone to listen to us. Because all our lives we're told that we keep complaining. If we give birth to a child and we complain, we're told like, oh, thank God that you have a child to begin with. Like, why are you complaining? You're choosing to be a mom. You did this, right? And because of that, a lot of women feel like it's a backlash. Like, I can't even say I'm tired because I have a baby and I should be thankful for having a baby. It's crazy how much guilt we have and how much we are taught that a lot of the things that we face needs to be endured, because everyone before us struggled the same. So why are we complaining now, right?
And the society, at the moment, the society is judging a lot, moms. You are blamed because you are breastfeeding till your baby has 2 years old. You are blamed because you are just breastfeeding after 2 months. So,
and there's no winning.
I think that we, around these all things, we forget a lot the mental health.
100%, yeah.
When I see a mom that used to be working out every day till the last day of the pregnancy, and then how can I say this, mom, after 4 weeks, you cannot do any exercise before I see you? I cannot. I need to listen to this mom. And if she tell me, but I need this 20 minutes with me and my exercise. I need this time. Okay, so let's arrange the way to do it in the safe way. Mental health is very important, and it's very, very important during the postpartum. And I know that we need to follow the guidelines. This is one of my main approach. I look a lot into the science, but I also look a lot into the mental health. And we need to put on the balance. What is the most important thing? Can I help this woman even if she starts running 10 minutes a day after 4 weeks? Can I follow this woman during the first three months, and she can do her exercise at the same time we can help her with the pelvic floor. Perfect. Why not?
It's our job. That's why I was so specific about choosing my physiotherapist. I don't want to go to a physiotherapist that tells me no, right? It breaks me. Me as an Emel who likes training, I don't want to hear, oh, you can't do it anymore. Halas. You know, it's the end of your life. No, you guide me. Help me find a way to reach my goal. That's the ultimate, I think, way to approach things. And that's why I'm also very picky. I even tell my own clients, like, you have to be picky when it comes to your trainers, when it comes to your doctors. You ask questions. You have a right to ask the questions, and you have a right to refuse a certain way of being coached. But you need a team at the end of the day. I think that's what I wanted to end with. You need a team. You need a good OBGYN, a good physiotherapist, and a good personal trainer that also communicate with one another, right? Like, I want to know what your physiotherapist said. I want to understand and talk to her possibly if you're facing something, so I know how to coach you better. But yeah.
My main goal in the treatment is the patient goal. So I need to follow it. And I need to... My main goal should be helping this woman how she can reach her goals.
Thank you. Thank you for this conversation. It's pleasure. So important. and I think we should end it with that. Thank you for being on here.
Exactly. I think it's too much.
We don't want to bombard people just yet. Just wait for it. I think one of the most important things that I've learned from my conversation with Selena is that you're not alone. You should not suffer in silence. If you're facing any type of struggle or pain, seek help. There are people out there who can help you. And if you have a goal outside of motherhood, that's okay. I even remember having a conversation with someone when I was asked, what's more important, family or health? And in reality, health is more important, in my opinion, because if you don't have your health, you're not going to be able to take care of your family. And that is something that I sometimes have to remind myself as a mom. So if you're listening and you feel like you might be struggling in some sort of way, and you might be going through the same things that we've talked about in this conversation, feel free to reach out. I'll be more than happy to help. Thank you for listening to the Leap Podcast. Make sure to subscribe and tune in. Also, don't forget to leave a rating and review and share it with your friends. It'll make it easier for people to find the show and to also learn from it. Your support means a lot. You can find me on Instagram at leap.of.hope or feel free to contact me via email, ml@leapofhope.fit. I am your host, Emel Morad, and this podcast is brought to you by Dukan Media. Thank you and keep leaping.